crude laboratory in the basement of his home.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today we have a tremendous episode for you, a conversation with Kimmy Donahue, a senior agency success manager at Openly, but Kimmy is so much more, and if you follow on LinkedIn, then you know that. What I love is in her LinkedIn bio, it starts with InsurTech, sure, but then revenue rocker, making businesses sing. I think it's absolutely phenomenal, and Kimmy is one of a kind. We hadn't had a chance to talk long form yet like we did in this podcast, and it was wonderful. She had reached out to me actually after the episode that I had done a while ago about the Insurance Hub and neurodivergent insurance professionals and what it means for our industry. And we talked a lot about that. We talked a lot about just insurance in general, business in general, life, a lot of amazing topics, incredible conversation, very open, very candid. And these are the kind of conversations that I do, that like the reason I do the show. Like, we can talk tactics and strategy all day, but quite honestly, that stuff bores the hell out of me. Insurance and selling insurance is actually really easy, and if you make it hard, that's really a you problem. It is the emotional, relational, leadership, management, dealing with crises, communication. It is the soft skill stuff that either makes us a success or failure, not our ability to execute tactical activities. And conversations like this one with Kimmy are exactly the reason that I do this show, and I'm so happy to bring it to you. If you love this show, guys, if you enjoy this show, please share the show. Social, text it to a friend, email it to a friend, tell somebody at an event that you're at. We continue to grow. We continue to have great conversations. We continue to bring amazing people on with incredible stories, incredible insights. And I want to get those individuals as much exposure as we possibly can and expose more people to what we're doing here and just the way that we approach these topics, the way that we approach business and life. And if you want to help and want to push the show forward, would love that. Share. Also, if you're enjoying the show, then you'll love the writing that I'm doing on Finding Peak. Go to Finding Peak, FindingPeak.com, FindingPeak.com, as in Finding Peak Performance. And the whole concept is 10x ideas to build more freedom into our lives. If we have freedom, we can do great work. We can grow our businesses. We can grow our relationships. We can take on side projects. We can find, you know, kind of that Dan Sullivan idea of our unique ability. But we cannot do that without freedom. If our life is packed, if our brain is packed, if we are under stress, if we are under someone's thumb, if we're under our own thumb, which is often most likely the case, then we cannot get there. And Finding Peak is about that journey. It's a journey that I'm on personally, and I just share my own thoughts and feelings, the research I do, the things that I try in my business life, in my personal life. And I think you'll enjoy it. Go to Finding Peak. It's free. Sign up. Subscribe. You get one email a week from me with stories and ideas. Guys, I just absolutely love the fact that you listen to this show. I try to put as much work into it as I can. Hopefully, you feel the heart and soul that comes through in every episode and how much I care about delivering value to you. And I just appreciate you for listening. Thank you so much. All right, guys, with that, let's get on to Kimmy Donahue.
I'm going to Shaboom.
Hey, how are you?
Good. I am trying to, let's see here. Testing. Can you hear my microphone?
Yeah, you are. Your microphone is emasculating me right now. So.
Oh, no. It's actually microphone. I'm like, ooh.
Sounds awesome.
Cool. Yay.
Well, I'm excited to have you on the show.
Likewise. Yeah, you're not on my show. I'm on your show, but I'm super excited to talk about this stuff. This is stuff I could talk about all day. So,
yeah. And so I'd love to start with just in general for people, just a little bit of your origin story. You don't have to go too far back or just spend too much time on it, because I don't want to like, I want to talk about other stuff, but yeah, I'd love to just a little bit of origin story for people who may not know, or may not have heard you or seen you doing your thing or follow you on LinkedIn or all the other places that you're creating. Just to give the audience a little backstory.
Yeah. So I am Kimmy Donahue, currently agency success manager over at Openly. Prior to that, if we want to go all the way back, how I got into the insurance industry, it's like everybody just kind of fell into it, right? I was super interested in what it can do for people and, you know, started as a producer at a captive company, opened my own captive agency, went independent and actually exited from a partnership and joined Openly. So that's my insurance origin story. A couple other things about me is I'm just one of those that loves to take action. So I'm involved in many projects. I've got a lot of different hobbies. Music's one of them, hence this cool microphone that I'm really struggling to get, like, to stay in the picture because of that virtual background stuff, you know? But yeah. Anyway.
The good news is I don't produce the video, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, cool. Even better. So no one will actually see what's happening on here. Then I won't care. I'll face it more towards me so it sounds better. There you go. Well,
so what happened was, and I know this wouldn't be a problem from you because you're just comfortable being in front of people, but what I find is when I produce the video, people get really weird.
Oh, no.
And yes. Yeah. Like, we could have these open, honest, you know, conversations that are dynamic and all over the board, which is why I do the show and what I love about it. And if I tell them I'm recording the video, I'm going to put it on YouTube, I will get these square conversations where people, and I don't know what it is. I'm like, you know that people can hear the words on Apple Podcasts, right? And they're like, but if you can see their face, they're like, they completely change. So
interesting.
Yes. For that reason, I would love to do a video show, but I feel like it really has to be in person. Like, you know, I think that, when you produce the video, I think the audio is different for some people. I think people, it doesn't feel like you're talking to thousands of people when it's just audio, but when you know, the video is being produced, people all of a sudden they have to look right and they have to sit right. And they're like, and I'm like, you know, so it just changes everything. So I just stopped producing the video a long time ago.
Interesting. No, that'd be a really cool, case study to run with and see, you know, what kind of different conversations you have. You know, with all of that.
Yeah.
That is very interesting. Huh.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. So
no, but no, that's music, okay. That's going to happen this whole show probably, which I'm totally okay with and get, but yes, this is, probably why I'm okay with being on video is I'm on stage. I sing when I'm not doing insurance related things. And prior to that, I was always in different kinds of competitive sports, whether it was motorcycle racing. I was involved in competitive shooting as well. So things like three gun. And even, you know, you go all the way back to my childhood, I was captain of my high school bowling team, you know, and not really something you always go out and say, hey, guess what I did, but yeah. I loved bowling. So it's just always very competitive. And going way back, because I know the reason that we wanted to chat was you had a post about neurodiversity and ADHD. Mm-hmm. So this is really where it gets interesting. So back in fourth grade, I was diagnosed with Tourette syndrome. And not a lot of people know about that. One, because I don't talk about it that much. I'll post about it here and again. And it's you know, people close to me know exactly what that is. But one of the reasons I never really talked about it prior was I said, you know what, I don't want to be labeled as the girl with Tourette's, you know, and it's interesting because you hear celebrities and, you know, famous people with Tourette's as well say the same thing. Cause in today's day and age, it's so easy to get a label based on anything that makes you stand out anymore. Right.
If you don't mind me interrupting you here, and I probably will do this like 1,000 times,
go ahead.
I'm just interested.
I'll probably do the same.
Like Tourette's. So I don't, you know, you see like people with Tourette's in movies, right? And it's sure. So just maybe break down, if you could, quickly for people, like what does that actually mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the official definition to be diagnosed with Tourette's is you have to have at least two motor tics, which are physical actions. So, you know, a twitch of some sort, or maybe you have to jump up and down, and one vocal tic. And vocal tic doesn't necessarily mean you have to be speaking words. I know one of the common things that you'll see in, you know, comedies and, you know, the movies and stuff is people cursing. Yep. And that's just a piece that could happen with it. I'm lucky I didn't get that piece, and I'll cover that in a minute. But I do have several tics, you know, like sounds that I make with my mouth, and they were a lot worse when I was younger. So that was also, what's interesting is, wouldn't say I've grown out of it, but it's definitely gotten better. And I truly think it's just because I learned how to handle my emotions and stuff mm-hmm. better. I've noticed that when I'm extremely stressed or the opposite, excited, my face twitches get crazy, and I focus more on that, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, Tourette's, it's more prevalent in males, which is also very interesting. And they're not really sure. I say they, as in, you know, doctors, they're not really sure where it comes from. It could be genetic, maybe, it could just be something that is developed. So there's still a lot of research going on what it is and how it becomes a thing. And it's also one of those things where just because you have a tick of some sort, you know, or a habit is what I used to like to call them, doesn't mean you have Tourette's. So what started for me was when I was younger, I had really bad, like squinting twitch and a couple other things, but that was really the prevalent one when I was younger. And my parents didn't know what it was. They thought it was just a habit that I was doing. So we created a reward system where if I could quit squinting for 30 minutes, I'd get ice cream or something, you know. And people that know me know I love ice cream. I love food. So that was a really hard thing to not win.
Yeah.
And when they found that I could stop it for a little while, but it would come back worse, they're like, okay, something's going on.
Yeah.
It took a couple of years, but finally we went to a psychiatrist, and, you know, they diagnosed me with everything under the sun, which I've started writing about, because I thought, looking back on it as a kid, you don't know that doctors should be asking a lot of questions, you know. And back then, so I thought, oh my gosh, I've got all these things wrong with me. Looking back on it, I think my parents probably could have gotten a second opinion. I think I still would have gotten diagnosed with Tourette's, absolutely. But they diagnose you with all the other things that they think come with Tourette's, like ADHD, OCD, depression, you know, all these other things. And I'm like, I'm in fourth grade, man. Like, but the one thing that really did help with getting diagnosed was now I had a name for it, and it was easier to cope mm-hmm. and explain to people, because, you know, let's say I was twitching, or when I was younger, I had one where I would do this. It's almost like I was trying to get my hair out of my face. And it was like I was shaking my head no. And teachers and like summer camp counselors thought I was telling them no, and they would get really frustrated with that. So once I was able to have a name to that diagnosis, I could explain it. And even then, and even to this day, it's still such a misunderstood, thing that it does take a little bit of extra steps to tell them, no, it's okay, I'm okay. It can be annoying, you know, but it's just part of me.
I couldn't agree with you more. And again, like I said, like the whole point of that podcast, the couple of podcasts I did and talking through with the Insurance Hub, which is, I think, an incredible organization that I'm really excited as Mike continues to get that off the ground around neurodiversity in the insurance industry. I got diagnosed with ADHD. It's not debilitating. I'm severely high functioning. And frankly, all it does is allow me. The main impact, though, has been my ability to understand how to communicate with people better. Because before, I just thought I was excitable, or I was considered like a troublemaker, not in that I did bad things, but that I was constantly like annoying the shit out of adults when I was a kid, or they called me the megaphone, or, you know, whatever, like a whole bunch of these things. As I've gotten into my work career, you know, I've been called disagreeable, overbearing. And in my mind, I'm going, I just have like 10,000 ideas and I want to share them with all of you all the time. Like, yes. 'Cause I want to share them with you. And like, that's what my mind is saying, is like, share, like, you know, let's go. Like, and I didn't realize, you know, that's overwhelming to some people. Like, some people's brain, you know, don't work that way. So, it's been very interesting to your point, where like having the label, I don't think that it, you know, I don't like to talk about it necessarily. I have been lately because I think it's important, but as soon as you have the label, you're like, oh, now I can figure out how to work with that. Before, I was just like, am I really nuts? You know, like you know, my ex-wife used to say to me all the time, like, why are you this way? Like, you're too much. You're too much. You're too much all the time. She used to say that to me. And like, that started thinking, I was like, man, am I just really like a fucking annoying person? Like, maybe I'm just annoying. And come to find out, it's actually true. To someone like her, I was too much. I was annoying and all this. And now when I meet a normie, which is what I call non-neurodivergent people, now I'm able to like dial in a little bit and go, you know what? If I give this person full throttle, they're probably going to hate me. So I'm going to give them like half throttle and see how that goes. And, but it's all, it, once you have that name, you can work with it, I guess, is a very long-winded totally. Way of saying,
yeah, I agree. And for those of you, since we aren't doing video, I'll let everyone know that my eyes are tearing up because I totally resonate with all of that, that I grew up with that exact same feeling with friends and, you know, even to this day, you know, with my peers, how I've combated that is setting the expectation up front is, hey, sometimes I can be a little much because like you, Ryan, I get super excited about my ideas. And I want to share them all,
yeah.
You know, and to people that like to take information and process it or be communicated with in a much different way, you know, that can be really overwhelming for them. So I love the fact that you are open to, well, how do I communicate with others? Because there's, mm-hmm. believe it or not, I'm sure you and I have yet to meet some, but there's people that are even more than
oh,
know,
yeah.
how your brain works. And you'd probably be like, whoa, you know, how do
yeah.
that we work with that? So I think what's really interesting too, is the word neurodivergent is actually, it was really new to me, mm-hmm. You know, the last maybe 12 months or so. And I was just like, wow, that's, I never knew I fell into that category because I didn't even know it was a thing.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's
same.
100%. Yeah, it's
same,
cool
yeah.
that people are talking about it. And I think the just like any kind of DEI conversation of is just how do you communicate with others in the way they want to be communicated with, you know?
The hard part is people like you and me are better than all the normies. So we actually have to dial it down. I'm kidding.
Oh,
I'm kidding.
No.
I'm kidding. All you normies out there who've made our lives miserable for the last however many. No, I'm just kidding. No, but one of the things, and I don't know if you heard the show that I did with Michael from the Insurance Hub. But
I did. Yeah, I listened to it and I love his energy too. I'm like, whoa, this is cool.
Yeah, yeah. And it's what I think is really interesting is that. And we talked a lot off the air too, and have had other conversations off the air. Cause I want to be involved with his organization more. Cause I think it's very important. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that we've talked about is how, unlike maybe other things that could be different about you. All right. Cause I don't want to say a handicap makes you in a different category of just things that could be different about you mm-hmm. from the standard kind of normal version of a human. Right. Neurodivergent people, and I think he would agree on this perspective to a certain extent. It is, I think the onus is on us to work on ourselves to communicate in certain situations with people who may not know how to handle us, because I think it is too much of an ask to have the greater population change to adapt to us. So I think that right now I have like seven things going on in my head at one time. I'm trying to stay very focused on you, right? Like I could easily fly off on a tangent if I allowed myself to do so, or if I were tired or when I get excited, obviously that happens similar mm-hmm. to you. But it is impossible for someone, and this is what I learned mostly from my ex-wife, because she is a normie. It is impossible for her to follow along. So there are two things happening at one time. Those of us whose brain works in a different way, we need to work on ourselves to be able to communicate in a productive manner as much as we can to the people who maybe cannot keep up or cannot follow the way that our brain moves. And then we need to train leaders to to better understand what is going on with someone's brain like ours and those like us, so that they don't see us as troublemakers or as people who are too much or overbearing or what have you, they're able to dissect what's going on and use it for what it is, which I like to think of it as a superpower. Like, you sure. know.
Yeah, I love that perspective. And I think it's a very mature answer to some of the challenges that we're facing. I think there's definitely training involved on both ends. And I love that the movement that you guys are trying to start of, you know, it's, we need to learn how to communicate with others, because it is a big ask to say, well, no, I want you to communicate with me the way I want to be communicated with. Like, that's not fair to anybody, regardless of what side you're on.
Yeah.
One of the really cool things that I've been involved in is feedback training. Ooh. And also, you know, personality assessments. I've always been a big fan of those, not to box you into, hey, this is who you are, but it opens up conversations just like this to say, hey, well, how do you like to be communicated with? What are the things that tick you off? You know, it really helps create understanding on both ends so that you guys can come to an agreement and set expectations up front. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that anyone that's neurodivergent can do is set the expectations. And it doesn't have to be in a way of, hey, I've got this. And I think it's real easy to fall into that trap. And I think this is probably a really polarizing statement, but like, I've found that sometimes people use that as a crutch, and it makes my blood boil, any kind of victim mentality. But
100%.
I love it when people call it a superpower, because when used right, it definitely can be.
Oh, you know? Kimmy, so you know, this has been, and I don't mean to keep referencing like my divorce, my ex-wife, but it was a moment in time where
obviously, yeah, a big life event that
it was a big life event for me.
Absolutely.
But in such a positive way, we were not meant to be together. We produced two incredible children, but outside of that, she and I are very different people, and not her way is right or wrong. My way is right. And her way is, no, I'm kidding. If she listens to that, kind of kidding, mostly not. No, but what it did was it forced me, for a whole bunch of reasons, which may be obvious, maybe not, if anyone's ever been through something like this, to like be like, maybe I was the fucking problem. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't think I was, but maybe I was, right? It's because something didn't work. And in doing so, I went to counseling and all this kind of stuff. And it was a woman that I dated for a little while. We're not together anymore, but she was actually, she had an even, I don't want to say worse case, a more, I don't know how you would describe it, a higher level of ADHD.
Sure. Yeah.
We went on a date, and within 30 minutes, she looks at me and she goes, so you have ADHD, right? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I literally, no one had ever said that to me before.
Yeah.
People had like said ADD or whatever, like, but as like a poke, but not like in a way, she wasn't asking to be a jerk. She was being honest. It was an honest question. And so I kind of like, I said, you know, so we started talking, and she's like, I wasn't really, that was kind of rhetorical. Like, you 100% do. And I kind of took that in, and the conversation went on. And again, she wasn't being a jerk. We were just talking. So then I saw my counselor like that next week. And I brought up this conversation that I had with her, and she goes, oh yeah, I thought you like knew that.
Oh.
And I was like, holy shit, what does this even mean? So then I had to go figure out, cause I don't even know what it means. I mean, I knew what the letters stand for, but I didn't know what it actually meant to my life or how my brain worked. Mm-hmm. And the very first thing that my counselor said is, you cannot expect people to change the way they communicate with you. You have to change the way you communicate with them.
100%. Yeah.
And to your point on a victimhood mentality, and I also, I don't care what happens to me in my life, the last thing in the world that I want to be is a fucking victim. So like, so I was like, okay, great. And I can tell you, Kimmy, this has been I know we don't know each other that well, but like, this has been one of the most profound changes in my relationships with every single person, coworkers,
wow,
children, my ex-wife, women that I may have dated. And that's not it's been that many women, but you know, I mean, a couple people that I've had relationships with since,
yeah.
My parents, just everybody, because now Now I can go into a conversation and be like, okay, Ryan, you have 30 minutes. Here's the topic that you're talking about. I keep notes. I now start making agendas to stay on track, right? In places mm-hmm. where it's appropriate. And I just, yeah. I feel like there's so, it all of a sudden, like it opens your whole world when you know that you have this thing and you can work on it. And I want more people to feel comfortable having these conversations and working through these things, I guess, which is why I love that we're having this conversation.
Yeah. And that hits the point. I mean, just in general, regardless of whether someone's neurodivergent or not, having that, being able to have those kind of conversations and give feedback. And the timing on this couldn't be more perfect. Literally yesterday, and I posted this on LinkedIn too, I had a coworker reach out to me and say, hey, Kimmy, this is super unconventional, but can I reach out to you and give you some feedback? And I'm like, yes. I got so excited because he's the first one that's ever reached out to give me feedback. So I'm like, ooh, what is it? What can I get better? And it was around communication. I'm like, oh boy. And I kind of knew what was coming, but you know, he said, Kimmy, I you have great ideas. You know, and you communicate well, you know, in certain channels, but you know, maybe you can add some more context to your emails. So I wasn't being detailed enough, is what he was asking. But first of all, props to him because he presented it in an amazing way. And two, it just reminded me, I'm like, well, thank goodness I was taught to be learning based and mm-hmm. be open to that kind of feedback, because that could have gone way differently, you know, if it was two different people having this conversation. So it felt really good one to have that happen. And I'm like, you know, imagine what the world would be like if we could teach people how to be open like that. And like you said too, we can't go around asking, well, I'm this way, you need to communicate me with this way, you know, because everybody wants, has a certain way they want to be communicated with. Right. And it's up to us to, like, okay, so here's the thing. I grew up in a family of engineers, so you can imagine how different our personalities are. And I had to learn, you know, social skills. I had to learn communication styles. That definitely was not stuff that came naturally. And I'm still learning it. I'm not perfect by any means. And I think that's how it is for most people. You know, the confidence, communication, all of that is a learned skill over time.
What's up, guys? Sorry to take you away from the episode, but as you know, we do not run ads on this show. And in exchange for that, I need your help. If you're loving this episode, if you enjoy this podcast, whether you're watching on YouTube or you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, I would love for you to subscribe, share, comment if you're on YouTube, leave a rating review if you're on Spotify or Apple iTunes, etc. This helps the show grow. It helps me bring more guests in. We have a tremendous lineup of people coming in, men and women who've done incredible things, sharing their stories around peak performance, leadership, growth, sales, the things that are going to help you grow as a person and grow your business. But they all check out comments, ratings, reviews. They check out all this information before they come on. So as I reach out to more and more people and want to bring them in and share their stories with you, I need your help. Share the show. Subscribe if you're not subscribed. And I'd love for you to leave a comment about the show because I read all the comments. Or if you're on Apple or Spotify, leave a rating review of this show. I love you for listening to this show. And I hope you enjoy it. Listening as much as I do, creating the show for you. All right, I'm out of here. Peace. Let's get back to the episode.
You said that you were taught to be learning based. What does that mean? What did that look like? I love that concept. What you know? Maybe just expand on that a little bit.
It's my environment. It dates all the way back to my parents. They are both extremely intelligent and very open minded. They did a really good job raising me and my little sister without labels, without telling us that we had to do, you know, one thing one way or another. They allowed us to be ourselves and still be very nurturing around that. So, for example, like when I was diagnosed with Tourette's, you know, they didn't make a big deal out of it. They're like, okay, it's just part of you, you know? And so that was the way I grew up. It's like, oh, it's just part of me, you know, whatever. And my mom allowed me to be creative. Like, no one can see it on the podcast, but if you look me up on LinkedIn, I have purple hair, you know, like I have crazy hair, and my mom let me do that since I was little, you know, as long as I kept my room clean, of course. But so she allowed me to be creative and be myself. And then also I've just been really lucky, or have done a good job of surrounding myself with people that are similar, that are just very growth minded. That's what I mean by learning based, is just people that understand that, like, there's always room for improvement, and your perspective isn't always, you know, the only one that exists. And I think that was probably the biggest piece that my parents really helped drive home for me and my sister.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I and in all the sensitive subjects like religion, you know, political views and things like that. Like, I knew where my parents stood, but they never once told me I had to be that way, you know, which was super respectable. And eventually I did adopt most of what they, you know, what they run with, but it was cool. It allowed me to explore, you know, other religions, other, you know, whatever, just to see what else is out there and kind of create and, you know, develop my own ideas about life. And I think that if I didn't have that, I absolutely would not be who I am today.
Yeah.
And, I hope I can leave that with people, you know, that I come and interact with.
I love that. So there's a couple of things in there. I had a different but similar upbringing. Actually, my father was he's a tremendous dad and a tremendous grandfather to my children. But he was for me, although now he's a pushover, for me, he was incredibly overbearing. It was my way or the highway. And unfortunately, he went to jail for about 3 years for drinking. And when he was taken away, all of a sudden I got my mom 100%. My mom is more accept everyone, you know, she has her views and whatever of life. And she shared those with me and we had lots of conversations, but where I had questions, where I had different thoughts, where I had different experiences, we talked about all that stuff. And it was very, very open. You know, she was much more probably, if you read a parenting book, she's probably doing a lot of things wrong, but we were much more like friends than, I mean, obviously she was my mom and I treated her with respect, but like we had a very friendly relationship outside of a more kind of standardized, maybe 1950s parent child relationship.
Sure. But it sounds like you were able to have open conversations that you might not have had otherwise.
Yes. And yeah. I think for so many people, they don't get that, right? They grow up thinking the world is a way, and they get older and they do the thing that I probably dislike most in the world, is they put their shit on other people. And I actually just did a post about this that I'm going to expand upon maybe in a blog. I did just a social media post about it where I basically just said, like, you know, if there's a secret to having good relationships, it's don't put your shit on other people. Your shit gets to be your shit. It's America. We're blessed that we're born in this country. But I feel like we've started to shy away from what freedom actually means in this country, which is it used to mean I get to live my life and Kimmy gets to live her life and we can interact with each other. And I love that Kimmy gets to live the way she gets to live and Ryan gets to live the way he lives together. And it's great. And we can interact and do all these things. And we
have individuality.
Yeah. We have a few social constructs which allow us to interact in a healthy way, but otherwise you can do all your crazy shit and I can do all my crazy shit and everything's good. Yeah, and I feel like we've gotten to a point, unfortunately, where now freedom is I get to live how I want and Kimmy, you have to live how I want, or it's not freedom. And I'm like, well, that doesn't really work, because doesn't Kimmy get to think the exact same thing back? And then we get all this polarization and craziness and exactly. It's everywhere. There's no right or there's no like right side or wrong side. Although one side is obviously wronger than the other. But you know, there's, you know, and I hate that, because I think that permeates, I feel like people are less willing to be open in public because of this. They're less willing to share experiences with people. Our circles become tiny, tiny little circles and tiny, tiny little communities. Everything's velvet roped because we're so worried about people seeing who we are and then putting their shit on us. And I really dislike that. And I feel like when you are raised the way you were raised and kind of the way I was raised too, you grow up looking at that and it just feels wrong, right? Like you don't, maybe you don't always, I haven't certainly known how to express it. And I've certainly expressed it in ways that were unproductive at times,
sure,
but
we all have.
You know, this, you know, you know, people shouldn't put their stuff on you. You shouldn't put your stuff on them. And I think, yeah, this goes so much for the way that we interact and why I love your story about this guy giving you feedback, and then I'll be quiet. Wow, I'm talking about a storm.
Well,
today.
I just love that. Oh, sorry.
No. I think it's great. Is that what he was? What? Or I assumed it was he. I think you said he.
Yep. Yeah, it's a
she.
He.
Was it? Wasn't a judgment of you.
Not at
it
all.
It was a, yeah, hey, here's a way for you to be more productive if you want to be this. And that to me is 100% the right way to do this.
It's so he did it because he cares.
Yes.
And I think that was the big thing. And I was taught, you know, when you are giving feedback, that's honestly the best way to have a hard conversation with somebody is, hey, I need to have a hard conversation with you. Please know it's because I love you, or it's because I care. It's, you know, this is not to hurt you as a person. It's addressing the situation or the act or the, you know, the action rather. But I love everything that you just said within the last 5 minutes, because it ties back to everything we just said at the beginning of, you know, we can't expect people to communicate with us the way we want, just like people can't expect people to live their life the way they want them to live, you know, and vice. I mean, gosh, this could be a whole podcast on this topic itself. And it's interesting because what you said these days, what I found is that people are very scared to voice their opinions. And I'm, believe it or not, I am a very agreeable person, but I am very opinionated in the things that I am passionate about, mm-hmm, you know, and I found, especially in the workplace, when people need to give feedback, they get scared. You know, whether it's, well, I don't want to be singled out or, sorry, I got lost on that one. But what I'm getting at is because of the way, and we can blame it on social media, we can blame it on whatever we want, right? That people do get ganged up on when you stand out,
mm-hmm,
you know? And I think, and maybe you can relate to this, you know, with your ADHD, is I've grown up standing out. So to me, it's no different when you do get singled out and,
yeah,
not being afraid of that. And not everybody has had that experience. So I had to humble myself and go, okay, Kimmy, not everybody has opened a business, first of all, too. The reason I'm bringing that up and to give you some context is when I'm talking to people about, you know, sales or running, you know, managing something, and then I'm remembering, oh my goodness, I'm coming at it kind of from a completely different perspective. Not everyone's ran a business. Not everyone's gone through the experiences that, you know, that I've gone through. And I think having that perspective, regardless of what topic you're talking about, I think is really the key. And that's what would help these, you know, people feeling polarized. I mean, there's not everyone's going to agree. You know, some of my best friends have the complete opposite political and religious views,
yeah,
you know, but we're good friends. We just know, hey, you believe one thing, I believe one thing.
Yep.
You voted for so-and-so, you know, but we're still friends at the end of the day because we're kind and we respect each other. And I think that comes, that word respect really resonates with me. I read an article a while back about, they actually interviewed couples, like people that have married for like 50 years, people that, you know, got divorced and, you know, talked. They basically did this whole long interview. And at the end of the day, everyone, it all came back down to respect. You know, the ones that have been together forever, like they just have this respect that has been there for so long. And the ones that got divorced lost the respect. And I think, you know, regardless of the dynamic you have with somebody, whether it's at work, whether it is a romantic relationship, that respect piece is what's absolutely paramount, you know, to have a productive
conversation. I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, one of the things that I've had to work with some of my younger employees on, younger team members, especially my younger leaders, is that you don't get respect and you don't deserve respect. It's earned over time. And and frankly, the best way to earn it is to give it as much as you possibly can, as often as you can to other people. And then over time, it will come back to you. And I feel like, unfortunately, call it, we could blame social media, we could blame whatever, we could blame liberals.
you know, I think that we can blame right orthodoxy too. These people feel like because they show up and they have an opinion that somehow we all need to just respect them, or I'm this, my job title is this, so I deserve respect, or, you know, I'm this, the insert demographic group.
Even people in the neurodiversity.
Yeah, it's like,
know, we're not immune to that either.
Yeah. It's like 100%. No, you don't. Earn it. That's you earn it. Now, how much have you given out? Are you respectful of your three team members? Are you treating them? Are you understanding the way they want to be communicated with? Are you listening to them? Are you taking the garbage out? You know, I always think through that idea of like, the leaders take the garbage out, you know? And if you're not, then you don't fucking deserve respect. Right. So like, there's a reason they're talking behind your back because you haven't done the work. And I think that's really,
Or you haven't opened up enough to them for them to take the time to respect you and your vision, you know?
Yeah. I want to go back to something you said though, that I completely agree with. And I would like to just poke at a little more, which is this idea of when you've always felt different, being different isn't hard. I'm paraphrasing a little bit what you said, but I think that's essentially what you said. I could not agree with that more. Despite being a 6'4" white guy.
You're 6'4"?
Yeah. Everyone thinks
I'm like 5'1". That's crazy. You're tall.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to put like hashtag tall in my bio so people know.
Yeah,
I can't tell you how many conferences I've been to and people are like, I thought you were going to be short.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So despite, you know, being a white dude from the North, I have always felt different my entire life. I've never been an insider and I've certainly never felt like an insider ever. Like I have never felt that way. I've never felt like I was in the cool kids club. I've never felt like I was like easily accepted. I've always been a little different. And there's a whole bunch of reasons for that I won't get into. But so now as an adult at 42, I've also hit an age where I just don't give a fuck anymore. So like, you know, couple that with also being rewarded today, like today's society, and I think where I am in my career, having different ideas delivered respectfully, which I have not always done, just to be clear, delivered respectfully, overusing the word superpower. It's a gift, right? You feel you're like, oh my gosh, today I can't even think what it would be like to be a best practices agency. I think it's cute that people are best practices agencies, but if you're a best practice agency, you know what I know? Exactly how to beat you. And, you know, that to me is something that I feel like people don't think about. If you are living by the same rules that everyone else lives by, that's nice, but you're also, in my opinion, way more vulnerable. And that's why I feel like people who feel different, I hope that conversations like this one, what it shows them is, with respect and appreciation for the people you're communicating with, you don't just get to be an asshole because you feel different or have a different opinion. Mm-hmm. That is something you should cultivate and be proud of and surround yourself with other people that feel that way, because it is something truly that today I think employers are looking for, you know, respectfully, people who can think differently and do it in a way that isn't like being a jerk. I think those people are going to make more. I think that employers are out there searching for these types of people. I think these are the types of people that start companies that change dynamics, that have conversations that open people's eyes. And I just want more and more people to feel comfortable with this type of mentality. I guess I'm assuming to a certain extent you agree, but I'd love your thoughts on that.
I do agree actually with everything that you said. I think there's two parts to this. I think these days, being different has become mainstream.
Yeah. I need to become a conformist.
Right? No, don't do that. No, but I tread lightly with that because it's used. How do I say this? It is used in a victim way in a lot from what I'm seeing. And that it's interesting. Trying to think of an example that would drive home my point, but let's say, well, I'll use myself, but pretend. Let's say, I've got Tourette's and I think it's cool, but you know, you need to treat me different because I'm different. Okay. That was really elementary, but that's basically what I'm getting is you'll see posts or, you know, hear, even if you just go to a restaurant and listen to some conversations around you and eavesdrop and it just, boggles my mind how some people talk to each other. But I think,
Well, I think just while you're thinking about that, I think a lot of people, instead of doing the really hard work of figuring out how to maximize the things that make them different, they're just way more willing to use those as crutches to get shallow feedback and shallow victories that make them feel better, right? So they'll post something on social media about whatever their thing that they want to be victimized about is to get likes. Oh, you're great the way you are. Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm at this point, I'm probably a Jordan Peterson disciple. I mean, outside of God, I think that his methodology for living is like right up there on par with like Marcus Aurelius and the Stoics. And, you know, he has this clip that's passed around social media all the time. You can probably find it. But it was in his book, 12 Rules for Life, where he basically says like, the clip will usually start with something like, he'll say like good enough, but with a question mark. And he's like, you're not good enough. Everybody wants to tell people you're good enough. You're not. Why are you good enough? What do you mean? So you have this thing about you. That doesn't mean that you're perfect the way you are. It doesn't mean that you're good enough the way you are. It doesn't mean you should hate yourself, but it certainly doesn't mean that you shouldn't commit yourself to something you said earlier, which I respect and love, constantly working to improve. And I feel like people find a thing that gives them an out, or a ripcord or whatever. And then they just lean on that thing, right? It's like, you could have so easily taken the fact that you have Tourette's and had your life be half of what it is today because you used it as a crutch or a tool to get some sort of shallow victory when you needed it. But you obviously didn't. You plowed through it. You learned how to become a musician. You learned how to become a champion bowler, right? And all these other things that make you who you are because you pushed through it and you constantly improved, which I think should be held on the highest level of respect. But I think too often we find a thing that gives us a shallow victory that we can kind of play as a victim thing. You know, I have inflammation or I get migraines or I get whatever. And all these things are shitty. Don't get me wrong. They're shitty for sure. And there's things way worse, but you know, then I met a guy, I was speaking in North Carolina. This was years ago. His name is Sergeant Fuck. Oh my gosh.
Great name.
Yeah. No, I wish it was Sergeant Fuck. His name is, oh my gosh. Aubie will know. Sergeant. It's going to kill me, but he had a hand, an arm and both legs blown off in the war.
Oh goodness.
And this dude, if you see him, he's got a big smile on his face. He's still married. He's got two kids. He's got this badass truck that he had rigged out. He does these speaking gigs. He's funny as hell. Like he came on stage, man. I'm not going to do it justice, but it's just an example. Like this dude could have just laid in bed, become a 400-pound blimp and said, because of all these things that happened to me, you know, none of this is my fault. And he didn't. He's got an apparel company that he uses the proceeds to help veterans with depression and veterans who've lost limbs. And he starts to talk, he walks out and he's standing there and he's kind of looking at everybody and he's kind of deadpanning it, which I thought was great. And then he looks down at his crotch and he goes, I know what you're all thinking. And it's still there. And like the whole place just goes, you know, just starts laughing because, you know, you don't know, you see this guy come up and your first instinct is he's going to be fucking depressed. And he wasn't. And I was like, oh my God, if that dude can, and I'm sure he has bad days too, don't get me wrong.
Oh, but yeah, like everyone. Yeah.
But for that dude to be able to be a fucking Marine, like top of your life, physical fitness, badass, and to come home and then still have that mentality. I'm like, God. So I got a couple conversations happening in my brain. You know what I mean? Like, I think I'm doing all right. You know?
Yeah. No. To drive home a point on that is shout out to you for using that as inspiration, because people with a victim mentality would see that and go, well, they just wouldn't see it like that. You know, well, that won't happen to me, or I'm not at that level. I can't, you know, and start making up this story in their head. So shout out to you for using that for inspiration. And I love that you brought up the 12 rules for life, Jordan Peterson, because I just have a funny story I have to share.
Yeah, please.
Because not many people follow him because he is a polarizing guy. But so I bought my boyfriend a mug, a 12 rules for life mug off of Amazon, thinking it was the Jordan Peterson 12 rules for life. I didn't even read it. I just bought it because it said 12 rules for life, Jordan Peterson mug, right? Ryan, this is literally what it says. The last two are the most hilarious. Number 11, do not bother children while they're skateboarding. Number 12, pet a cat when you encounter one on the street. Now, you know, those are not the rules. So yeah. Someone like literally put these on there and I'm like, oh my gosh, but it was hilarious.
Yeah. That would be like, yeah, those are like the most like skewed derivatives of what he's actually trying to teach. I think
it's hilarious though.
I actually think I save a lot of stuff. I'm kind of crazy with, I love to be inspired. I love to take in, people are always like, oh, that stuff's trite. Why do you, like, I can get caught in like a positive, like I've broken the fucking TikTok algorithm because it doesn't show me any negative shit. Like if it's negative,
fantastic.
I can just consume.
You should teach a class on that. Honestly, I think that's the problem, is people get just bombarded with this junk.
Well,
I'm
not interested in negativity. I hate negativity, frankly. To me, it couldn't be more of a turnoff, not just like in a partner, but like in another human that I interact with when they're negative. I cannot stand it. And frankly, I just don't tolerate it. Like if someone's going to be negative, I mean, we all have moments, right? You get moments. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a lifestyle of negativity. Couldn't be more of a turnoff to me, because so what the fuck? You can call out shit that's bad. Like, good for you. That's not a positive characteristic. You're not smarter because people will be like, well, I'm a realist. No, you're an asshole.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like, you're a realist. Okay, I get it. Life is hard. We all fucking realize it. We wake up every day. Like, we get it. But how about we start to figure out, you know, better ways to operate? But I get caught in these loops, but I have this one that I save and I'll go through. There's like a few of them that I like will go through in this saved list in Instagram, or one of them that I just watch. And it's one of the ones that I watch almost every day is by Jordan Peterson. And it's this idea of he's being interviewed and the guy says, you're telling men to be monsters. And he's like, yes. And the guy is kind of incredulous, right? He's probably a liberal. And he's kind of incredulous. And Jordan Peterson's like, what? So be weak. He's like, that's what we want. We want weak people, weak men. And specifically he's talking about men, you know, in our society today. And he's like, so we need more weak men. He goes, no, he goes, you should not be weak. He's like, you should be an absolute killer monster and then learn how to control it. He said, because there's no virtue and being weak if you're weak, right? It's easy to be weak and to be deferential and to be a beta if you're a deferential, weak beta. That's easy. But if you're an absolute killer and you're able to control it and make the decision to be better and to be a good person, despite the fact that inside you is a monster, that there's real virtue in that. Mm-hmm. And that to me is something that I hold in my brain every day. Now, I wasn't in the military. I don't know how to do jujitsu. I have no idea how I would act in a situation that required you to be a monster. But I think the concept, the idea of be the most powerful, dominant, you know, thing you can be. And I think this goes for women too. It's just, he gets so attacked for his views on men. He was talking specifically about men. Mm-hmm. And then figure out how to be a better version of you with that inside you, that's where real virtue lies. To me, that speaks to the virtue, victimhood mentality. It speaks to constant improvement. It speaks to self-awareness. It speaks to respect. It speaks to understanding how to operate with personal agency, which is something I feel like we do not talk about at all in our society enough, is what personal agency means and how important it is. And, I don't know how the hell we got that far down that topic.
I don't know, but I think this should become a second episode. We should definitely schedule a second one and go deeper into this. This is fun.
For sure. You got an open invitation whenever you want to come back. I feel like we're just scratching the surface. So let me,
I want to be respectful of your time and of the audiences. So let me just hit you with a couple things. Do you think that your, desire to take on these hobbies and they're fairly, you know, intense things, you know, and being a musician and stuff, do you think that, that's part of a way of dealing? Do you think that's who you are? Or do you think it's part of a way of dealing with the way that your mind works? Because I know I've found that in my own life. I research shit. If I get something on my brain, I have to research it really. And it's just the way that I work. And it's because of the way my brain works. Do you think that that is the same for you?
I think so. And I think a lot of it is because it's hard for me to just sit tight in my, you know, my brain wants to do something. So mine, rather than doing the research, I just go and take action. I'm like, okay. I'm going to go try this thing. If I fail miserably, whatever. I learned something, you know, but I'm always looking for something new. And then of course, when I do it, I want to be the best I can be at it. That's hence where the competitive nature comes in. You know, like I enjoy recognition. I enjoy being a winner. So I find something I want to do and I'm like, okay, let's go do it the best we can, you know? And I think a lot of it is just, like you said, the way my brain works. And thank goodness, because of my environment, once again, my mom was really encouraging to try new things. And she literally said, you can't say you don't like it until you try it. You know, like I remember she had me play soccer and I don't want to play soccer. By the way, I hated soccer, but eventually I tried softball and loved that and, you know, and so on and so forth. Right. But because she constantly was pushing, just try it. I think I brought that into the rest of my life and thanks mom and dad, you know, a lot of it goes back to that.
Well, I think that you're a testament to how someone can be quote unquote different. I'm doing air quotes. You can't see me, but also highly successful. I probably talked too much, but I was just excited to talk to you. We will absolutely do this again.
Yeah,
I know
again.
You have to run. I'll make sure I have your LinkedIn on the show notes. And people should definitely follow Kimmy on LinkedIn. Where is there any other places you'd like to send them?
They can. I'm on all the socials. I'm on Facebook, Instagram. The good news is I have a really unique name, Kimiko Donahue. Haven't found anyone else with that name yet. So definitely look forward to connecting with everyone. And thank you so much for this, Ryan. This was super cool.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. And I look forward to the next time. Have a great one.
Awesome. Bye. Bye-bye. Yes.